That does it. Yes, sir. This afternoon, even that new PFC pulled his rank on me. When I get back, I'm going to open up a business of my own. Yes, sir. I've been taking orders long enough. When I get home, I want to be my own boss.
Me, all I want is to get back to my old job and to my girl.
What's the matter, Ike? Ain't you got no enterprise?
Okay, Private Enterprise, come along. I got a little detail for you.
Coming, Sarge. See what I mean, Ike?
The National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is a mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, saying, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the newsworthy milestones we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, July 7th, 1946, we present the 34th in the distinguished NBC series, The National Hour. Our subject for today,
Operation Dream Come True.
This is Robert St. John in New York. Since the war's end, millions of men, shaken loose from the quiet, accustomed ways of peace, have been coming home with a dream in their hearts, a dream of a better living based on skills that they acquired in service, a dream of a business of their own, a dream of independence. Here with me are three veterans, each of whom has made a new start since his discharge. And I have a story about an all-veteran Broadway musical hit, Call Me Mister.
This is Robert McCormick in Washington. Waiting with me to share in our report is an Army veteran from Washington who made one of the most unusual switches in occupations I know about. We are standing by.
More patrols, and I won't have any feet left. Hey, got a cigarette?
Huh? Oh, yeah, here, help yourself.
What are you doing, dreaming again?
Yeah, I just got the picture.
Picture?
Picture of me. I see it for the first time in my life, and you know what I see? A dope sitting at a bench from 9 to 6, 6 days a week, slipping bolts into holes and nuts onto bolts. What would I ever get mixed up in that kind of a job for?
Well, to make a living, I guess.
No, that ain't living. I don't know what yet, but if I ever get out of this, I'm going to do something I get a kick out of. Something that'll really be living, not just making a living.
Well, you see, Doc, here's the way I got the idea. Back on Saipan, they put me in charge of a mobile machine shop on a truck, you know, that is traveling around. Well, I ran it, no kidding. So I figure that's a hot idea for when I get home. Buy me a trailer and some tools and get up a route covering the state. It's a cinch.
Well, dreams are okay, Tom. You mustn't forget there'll be problems, too.
Oh, sure, sure, there'll be problems. They're always problems. But wrap my discharge in G.I. dough and give me an artificial leg, and brother, I'm all set.
Dreaming all the time. What good does it do you, Johnny? Ain't nobody gonna tell how he's gonna make out here. An 88 shell comes riding. If it's got your name on it, that's all, brother.
Sure, Frank. That's just it, don't you see? If I couldn't at least dream, I'd go crazy.
Yes, in the last few years, a lot of men have done a lot of dreaming. A sample survey made this past winter by the War Department here in Washington showed that about two-thirds of those who left jobs for war service were looking for or had taken new jobs.
Yes, a lot of men, fortified and matured in military service, have made the break and have set to work to make their dreams come true. For example, on New York's 2nd Avenue in the Midtown section, there's an unusual little shop with an unusual story. A story that goes back 2 years and 10,000 miles. Back to the hold of a mine layer escort vessel, part of a United States task force in the South Pacific. The night's dark and hot. Young radio man Salvatore Salvatore and another sailor lie in their bunks, unable to sleep.
Salvatore, what are you going to do after the war?
Me? I'm going to set myself up in the antiques business.
Antiques? But that takes dough, and you got to know people, rich people.
Not the way I'm going to go at it. I've got an idea. You see, what I'm going to do is get it...
Uh-oh.
Enemy submarine sighted, battle stations. Enemy submarine sighted, battle stations.
Let's go, Joe.
Yeah. Hey, watch it.
Oh, my back. I bumped.
Is it bad?
No, I guess not. Come on.
Salvatore guessed wrong about that bump. The injury was serious, and a few months later, he was out of the Navy. A few months after that, despite the fact that he had little money and no contacts, he was in a shop of his own, an antique shop. But still, the picture was not entirely rosy.
Salvatore, my friend, you fixed up a nice little shop. You have some very beautiful antiques. Why should you be looking unhappy?
Well, I haven't been selling much. My money is almost gone. I have some nice pieces, but there seems to be no way for me to reach the people who would like them.
But today, a little more than 1 year after he opened his shop at 1014 Second Avenue, Salvatore Salvatore is a solidly established antique dealer, craftsman, and decorator, with his own flourishing business doing what he likes. His dream has come true. For the story of how he did it, we have Salvatore Salvatore here to tell us. Mr. Salvatore, how did you go about setting up your own business? What did you use for money?
Money? I had my mustering out pay, $300. I figured that was enough. I didn't want to go to anybody for anything. I looked around the antique shop district on 2nd Avenue for an empty store and found a small one that used to be an electrician's shop. Almost all my money went to fixing up that store.
Then how did you get goods to sell?
Not having money, the way I figured it, the thing that would count was the work I put in on my pieces, not and how much I paid for my goods. I went to second-hand places, junk shops even. I knew where to go and bought broken objects cheap.
Broken objects?
Broken objects that had good parts. From the good parts, I made new and different pieces.
Then what counted was the artistic quality of your work.
Yes, that's the principle of which my whole business is based. I buy pieces in which I see possibilities, figure out what I can do with them, and go to it. That's all.
Very, very interesting. Now, how did you make contact with the right kind of clients?
I had a slow time at first, believe me. Then I got some unexpected publicity. That brought my work to people's notice. A woman came into my shop all excited about a couple of things she saw in my window. She turned out to be a newspaper feature writer. She was surprised to find that I had those pieces myself, especially when she saw how young I was. She wrote up my story, it appeared in a New York newspaper, and I began to get calls from clients.
A successfully established antique dealer and decorator at 21. That really is a dream story. Thank you, former Navy radio man we now call Mr. Salvatore Salvatore.
Salvatore's line of business, like the way he went at it, is of course rather unusual. But most veterans going into business favor the more common types of enterprise. Almost half of them start retail stores of the staple kind. Many ex-GIs are able to make a new start with skills learned while in the service. Of these, the ones who've been developing some of the most spectacular enterprises are veterans of the Air Forces. Some of these golden boys began their planning at a time most people would consider premature.
How do you like that? I take her over the worst hump, all right, the fog, and now with just a few more rocks to pass, she kicks up. We're going to have to crash land.
Not a smooth patch of rock in this valley. This oil and dynamite we're carrying doesn't take kindly to bumps.
Well, I can't help it. I've got to set her down.
There goes engine number two.
All right, get back, everybody, and hold tight.
Okay.
Hey,
That's that. Okay, Red. Have a look at the engines. We better fix them or we'll never get out of this valley.
Right.
Mighty pretty landing, Lewis.
Oh, thanks.
What are you going to be doing a couple of years from now?
A couple of years? Why?
Well, there's a few of us got a plan for when this shindig's over. We're saving our dough and we're going to form an air cargo company. Fly anything, anywhere. So when one of us meets a particularly hot pilot, we buzz him on it. What do you say, you want in?
Okay, I want in. If I come out all in one piece. Right now, let's see if we can do something.
Not long after the end of the war, the National Skyways Freight Corporation was formed, operated out of Los Angeles by a group of ex-Flying Tigers, using their veterans' priorities to buy surplus Army and Navy transport planes at bargain prices and taking on any load from and to any point in the United States. They were out of the red in 3 months and are today a spectacularly hot organization. All told, more than 250 non-schedule charter flying firms, big and small, have been licensed by the Civil Aeronautics Board here, most of them operated by veterans.
Another field that has proved surprisingly interesting to an appreciable number of veterans is one you probably wouldn't expect they'd take to, the field of the permanent wave in the Marcel. Yes, quite a few ex-soldiers, sailors, and Marines have decided upon investigation that making women more beautiful was work that paid well, was pleasant, and had a future. In fact, at one big Eastern hairdressing school this spring, about one-third of 300 students were ex-GIs. Some of them, upon graduating, will go to work in established beauty parlors. Others will apply for veterans' loans to open up shops of their own.
Some veterans already have. With me right now is one veteran who beat most of the others to the punch. He is James Portell, owner and operator of the Colony Beauty Shop at 4909 Georgia Avenue Northwest here in Washington. A lot of veterans have made unusual switches in occupations, but his is one of the most unusual I've come across. How is business, Mr. Portell?
Frankly, things have turned out a lot better than I ever dreamed. I've hired a full-time assistant and several part-time girls to take care of the 150 customers who come in to be beautified each week.
Well, you spent 3 years and 10 months in the Army in an anti-aircraft outfit, Mr. Portell, and if you don't mind my saying so, you hardly fit the standard picture of a male beautician.
Well, as a matter of fact, I started out in life as a truck driver during the day and a prize fighter at night.
Well, for your weight and build, I'd say prize fighting was more like it.
Even though I won most of my professional fights without working up a sweat, I never cleared a fortune. That's one of the reasons I wanted to get into some kind of steady work. So I figured I wouldn't be losing much time if it didn't pan out. I enrolled in a beauty school.
But it did turn out well, and you opened your own shop. Now then, what happened?
Well, the war came along, and I got a letter from Uncle Sam. I lost my shop because I had no one to run it while I was away.
Well, then, after nearly 4 years in the Army, you were discharged.
Yes, and I wanted to get back into business. I took out a GI loan for $3,000 and bought my present shop. That was a year and a half ago. I have the loan almost paid up. Besides that, my wife and I, with our 13-month-old son, Ronald, have a nice home of our own in Falls Church, Virginia.
Well, tell me, Mr. Portell, do you ever get tired of listening to gossiping females?
I guess I have a lot of patience, Mr. McCormick. Chatter doesn't bother me. Besides, some of my customers might be listening.
Well, thank you, Mr. Portell.
Most of us have to do one thing to make a living and something else for pleasure, a hobby which gives us some share of happiness. There have been some interesting developments among veterans with hobbies, like the story of Peter Monsolino of East 122nd Street, New York City. Pete had tried various jobs before the war, from taxi driving to tile setting, but none of them were for him. The only time he was happy was when he'd come home, relax at supper with his family, and then climb the stairs to the roof, where he'd open the door and,
Gee, mister, them pigeons land right in your head and shoulders. They eat right out of your hand.
Yeah, they've been doing it for 15 years.
Hey, gee, that brown one over there is sure pretty.
That's Brown Betty, my best bird. She's a homing pigeon, and fast. Come on, Betty, Have some corn. There we are. Atta girl.
Oh, gee, she's smart. But how can you tell she's fast?
Oh, I've raced her.
Pigeon race? Like they race horses?
Well, not exactly, but it's just as much fun.
It is?
Yeah, heck of a lot of fun.
Yes, when he could relax with his pigeons, Pete Monsalino was a happy man. And then the war came. Pete did a tour of duty in the Coast Guard. There was a lot of time for thinking in the Coast Guard. And then Seaman First Class Monsalino became a mister again. And he took the plunge. And so nowadays, if you drop in at the small store at 2419 2nd Avenue, a couple of blocks from his house, you'll find Pete Monsalino there as owner and operator of the Swan Pet Shop. And he's here now to tell us how he's making out. Mr. Monsalino, how do you run a pigeon business? Where do you get your pigeons and who buys them?
Well, Mr. St. John, you buy some from fellows who breed them as a hobby, the way I did. But mostly you buy from pigeon breeding farms out on Long Island and New Jersey.
And do you sell any other animals in your pet shop?
Once in a while I have a litter of puppies, and around Easter, little chicks. But the Swan Pet Shop's been mostly a pigeon store.
And you make out all right just selling pigeons?
I made out fine till a few months ago.
Uh-oh, then what happened?
Then I found I couldn't get any more birds.
And why not?
Well, you've heard of the meat shortage.
Oh, yes, and I've eaten some squab in restaurants myself. But with no birds available, didn't that leave you in a bad spot, Pete?
It would have if I didn't do something.
And what did you do?
Well, I had to think and look around, and I finally figured out that if I had bicycles for hire, that would pay off. I still have pigeons, though not too many, and I sell feed for them and other pets. But I also have bikes for hire, and they're very popular. And in my window are bicycle parts for sale. With this new line added, I'm making out all right.
Well, we're glad to hear that, Pete. You've certainly shown enterprise. Looks like you're one fellow who's all set to ride out the meat shortage and the pigeon shortage. Thank you, Mr. Pete Monsalino. We wish you the best of luck. One afternoon a few months ago in a building on West 49th Street, a few doors from Radio City, New York, two veterans who had just opened for business stood around nervously waiting.
Well, do you think he'll come, Marty?
Well, he wrote he would, John, if he could get away.
Oh, geez, a very busy guy.
Sure, but if he can get away, I...
Marty, do you suppose
it's... Sure it is. He's here. He came.
Hey, look, it's Ike. Hey, it's General Eisenhower.
Yes, it was General of the Army Dwight D. Eisenhower dropping in on some old friends, ex-Master Sergeant Morris Marty Snyder and ex-Staff Sergeant John Schwartz, at the start of their careers as independent businessmen, restaurant men. Eisenhower, the Army's new chief of staff, was a very busy man, but not too busy to interest himself in the civilian careers of two veterans who, in their own small way, had made things a little smoother for him during the strenuous days of war. For the story behind this veteran's enterprise and General Eisenhower's special visit, we've brought to our studios Army veteran Marty Snyder, one of the owners and operators of the new headquarters restaurant. Marty, what's the bond between General Eisenhower and you?
Well, St. John, all the time Ike was Supreme Commander at Supreme Headquarters Allied Expeditionary Forces, I was in command of all the messes for that same organization. I organized the supplying and feeding of Schaefer. My restaurant partner, John Schwartz, was in charge of service for Schaefer. And the man who runs our cocktail lounge, ex-Master Sergeant Mickey McKea, was the general's orderly and right-hand man from the time he was picked in 1941 by the then Colonel Eisenhower, right through to the end of the war. You can read all about it in Mickey's new book, Sergeant Mickey and General Ike.
Well, that's a plug, son, and no joke. Well, then the general must have liked the service he got from you, and he must have liked you, too.
Well, we got along.
Well, I'll bet you did. Where was your biggest Army job?
Well, that was in Paris. I was in charge of the messes at seven hotels, including the war correspondence mess at the Hotel Scribe.
Oh, yes. I remember eating at the Scribe myself when I was in Paris. That was famous as the best mess in the whole war.
Yes, we kept the correspondence well fed.
Well, Marty, when did you get the idea of opening your headquarters restaurant?
One of the correspondents who ate at the Screeb Mess had the idea. He said I could make a go of a big-time operation on Broadway. I didn't take it seriously at first, but when other correspondents kept saying the same thing, I began to consider it. When the war ended and I came home, I got together with John Schwartz and with an old friend of mine who handled publicity. We secured GI loans, added some private funds, and got started. After a lot of work, we were able to open headquarters restaurant last February.
Is it strictly GI?
As much as possible.
And do the GIs like to drop in?
Yes, everybody from privates to 4- and 5-star generals.
And how are you making out?
Just fine. We hit it off right away. My associates and I, with our wartime experience, GI loans, and the cooperation of a lot of our service friends, we took a chance. And it looks like we've made good in a big way.
Well, it certainly does, and thank you, Marty Snyder.
One of the most glamorous fields of enterprise in the United States is show business, and quite a few ex-GIs wanted to get into the act. Theatrical producing organizations are busting out all over.
A lot of these are getting underway as summer theaters, warming up for the fall Battle of Broadway, and there's the Veterans Memorial Stage, newly formed by a group of ex-fighting men preparing to open a season of repertory in New York. They've set up an interesting system of priorities.
In casting, top priority will go to veterans of World War II.
Next priority to veterans of the First World War.
Third priority, if and when necessary, civilians.
But the big success story of all these ventures so far is the musical revue, Call Me Mister, currently a smash hit on Broadway. Call Me Mister has more stars in it than any commercial show ever to play Broadway. Not stage stars, but battle stars. Everyone in it served in one or another branch of the service, the WAC or the USO.
Would you like the recipe for a hit musical GI style? Well, take one big-time performer. In this case, the movie star Melvin Douglas. Put him in the Army. This one put himself in the Army. Ship him overseas to the Pacific. Bring him back to the States with an idea that was generated by 2 years of working with GIs and seeing them put on good shows for their buddies under what would have been considered impossible conditions. In jungle and desert, in disease-ridden and Jap-infested areas.
And continuing the recipe, take two well-known writers, in this case Harold Rome and Arnold Auerbach, put them in Uncle's brown suits, set them to work writing songs and sketches for soldiers' shows GIs can put on for themselves almost anywhere, and as the war ends, have them working on an idea.
Take one overage civilian named Herman Levin, who knows producing problems and angles. Have him very receptive to the idea.
Mix all these together. The product? One tasty musical review by, with, and about GIs. In fact, a new Broadway smash hit, Call Me Mister.
And now the National Hour has the pleasure of presenting a sample of the stuff that's packing them into Broadway's National Theater. Presenting Harold Rome's song satire, Military Life.
There are ads in all the papers, there are signs on every truck, with a picture of the soldier's friend, the good old Roger Duck. And it says beneath the picture, kindly treat with great respect the guy upon his coat lapel, this button you detect.
A sentiment very dear to each one here. But remember what the first columnist, a Greek named Aesop, who lived 2,000 years ago, wrote. You can't make a nylon pocketbook out of a pig's ear!
Exclamation point, unquote. That's the fact you want to note. Take the case of Charlie Jones, drafted when the war began, now returning to civilian life a veteran. jerk before he got into the service. He was a jerk and never on the square.
He would shoot with loaded dice, loved to peddle stolen ice, stole milk
from babies
in his spare time. But all the chains of army life, the touch of discipline and strife, through the muck and the mire, through the black and the fire, the military magic did its work. From a foreign shore, he is back once more. Still a jerk. Oh, the service made a hero out of some guys that were bum guys who we knew. They can take a heel and make him over. Really, though, schluck, merely through and through. But a miracle's a miracle, and though we sound empirical, believe us, there are limits to even things that Nimitz, Halsey, and MacArthur can do. He was a jerk before he got into the service. He was a jerk and ever on the square.
He would shoot with loaded dice, loved to peddle stolen ice, stole milk
from babies
in his spare time. But all the chains of army life, the touch of discipline and strife, through the muck and the mire, through the black and the fire, the military magic did its work. From a foreign shore, he's back once more. Still a jerk. An absolute no good for nothing jerk.
Well, that's it. Our subject for today, the story of some of the more unusual enterprises undertaken by veterans seeking their personal victory in Operation Dream Come True. And this is what we have found.
That millions of veterans have come home from the war with new ideas about the kind of life and work they want. That for a lot of ex-GIs, the most important aspect of coming home has been the chance to make a fresh start. That in spite of shortages and difficulties, a lot of veterans have successfully launched businesses of their own. Some using new skills learned in military service. Others using new ingenuity and resourcefulness to realize their dream of congenial work and independence. The National Hour wishes all the veterans who appeared on this program and all veterans everywhere the best of luck. And we hope they'll have better and better success with their personal post-war project for happiness. Operation Dream Come True.
On this subject, then, our documentary is ended.
But this is Robert St. John inviting you to listen to the National Hour again next Sunday when our subject will be American Forests.
This has been the National Hour. From our studios in New York and Washington, the National Broadcasting Company has brought you the 34th of this series on current affairs and national problems. Our guests today were veterans Salvatore Salvatori, Peter Munsolino, and Morris Snyder from New York, and James Portell from Washington. Robert St. John was your narrator, with Robert McCormick reporting from Washington. Military Life was sung by the Smoothies. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.